Good morning and good coffee, everybody. Hey, it's time for some morning coffee with Larry. I'm glad that you are here joining with me today for a nice hot cup of brew to start off your morning. And I am enjoying just some generic, nice, hot orange pekoe tea with a little bit of my honey in it. So that's always a good thing. Well, today is Tuesday, the 30th of April, 2024. And despite all my intentions, these podcasts are coming out too infrequent. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here the past few mornings. I've been just tired. It's been hard to get out of bed, you know, early enough to get this done when you've got chores going on and you're doing a daily Bible reading each day with, you know, with my wife, and that we do that in the morning to kind of start off the day. And I guess I just got to get up a little bit early and push my way through it so I can get something out. But we've had a lot of fun things. The last time I did a podcast, it was around the time when the eclipse was. I think it was the 8th or the 9th or something like that. And I made mention that on the day of the eclipse, we had one of our goats have triplets. And a few days before that, we had another one who had twins. Well, they are outside in a pen and enjoying the extra space to just frolic around and be like little goats do. And it's just a lot of fun watching them. And the mamas, they we let them out with the rest of the herd for a time and then put them back in the large pen. It's not the large pen, but you know what I mean. It's actually, 32 foot square, so that the babies can nurse, and that's fun. And some other fun things that we have done: we went up to the sale barn at Arthur, Illinois. Today's Tuesday, so it's this past Thursday, and we had some chickens to sell. And didn't get as much as what we hoped, but you know, that's the thing with an auction, a regular auction. You know, you if there's too many people there and you're at the end of the auction, no one wants to buy your stuff. If you happen to get there early, or not early, but if your item gets sold early, hey, you can make a lot of money. It's a seller's market. And if there's not very many people there, it's definitely a buyer's market. So, but we did come home with something. We came home with 10 somethings. We came home with 10 Polish chicken eggs. Now, I don't know if you know what a Polish chicken looks like, but they are funny. You need to just Google a picture of a Polish chicken. On the auction, they typically bring a fair amount of money because they're kind of a unique bird, and more people are getting into backyard chickens and they're wanting some fun and some variety. And, you know, like that's the way it is with us. We have our egg layers. We have Colombians that have been our mainstay egg layers, and we are adding a bunch of a new flock, which would be Barred Rock, and they're still in the chick stage of different ages, because we got a few different ones, two different batches that we have in one pen. But then we have Silkies, which are a fun, overly fluffy variety, which is one of those unique types of chickens. And then we have Saramas, which are teeny tiny chickens, full grown. They're just short, and they're fun. They're bigger than a quail. Their eggs are bigger than a quail, but they're the noisy ones. So we've got our incubator going with those Polish chicken eggs in there. And then we also grabbed some silky eggs because there's some people who've been interested in getting some silkies from us. So we've got the incubator going, and just those kind of fun things. We've been doing probably just more maintenance as we're gearing up towards spring. We don't have anything planted yet. And frankly, right now, everything is a muddy mess because we've had a lot of rain. I would say that the drought is over. The drought is over, and now we got plenty of water. River's full, the yard is full, and we need a good 10 days with no rain so things can soak in, dry up a little, and we can get out into the garden and get it tilled up and planted on the things that we want to have. So that's a fun thing. Also, had a bee swarm that was not far from my hives, and I think that's where it came from. And so I have a new colony there. I also made some splits, and if the splits take, that'll put me at, I believe, 9 hives. And then hopefully I'll have some splits coming from a friend, a beekeeper, and we'll be able to add even a few more hives, wanting to kind of ramp up the honey operation. So anyway, the theme of maintenance, of doing things, has been on my mind. Some things are beyond what I can do physically, so I hire people to do that. We're having to replace a large sliding door on the machine shed, so I'm having a crew come in to do that. But there's other things that taking over the farm, you know, after my dad died, and doing a few things, not that much, you know, before that, I've had to really learn a lot of stuff that I never did growing up. I had a great dad, and he was very much one who loved to serve others and do for others. He had a skill set that was very broad, and it was wonderful. But I learned to depend upon him, and then once he was gone, I had to figure this stuff out on my own. Because you can't hire somebody to do everything. Nobody has that much money in the normal range of life. There's some people that, you know, that do, and they have servants, and I often think that'd be nice to have, but thus, that is not my walk in life, and that's probably a good thing, because I do enjoy learning new things and new skills. And I came across this in a post on Facebook, and let me pull it up here. And it was kind of a truncated list from an article that was published in Harper's Magazine back in 1933. And it was, and I'm sure you've seen things like this before where, you know, these are things that, you know, men should do, or these are things that women should do from, you know, like the 1950s. And people often make fun of those. But I like this list. I like this list. It's a fairly long one. And the post with the truncated list, it says, here's the short list with short in parentheses. I did look up the article, and it is a fairly long article. And it's titled, What a Young Man Should Know. And it's from the March 1933 issue of Harper's Magazine. And again, you can easily find it. You know, it's not in a, you know, behind a firewall or something, you know, where you have to have a subscription or anything to check it out. It's just out there. And it's definitely worth reading if this is something that is of interest to you. But I want to take some time and work through this list. And I doubt if we're going to get through it all today. And I may turn this into, you know, a short series, because I think it's worth discussing. You know, one of the things that I guess has been a passion of mine for a long time has been with activities that help youth. I was a youth once. It was a long time ago. I'm sure for most of the listeners here, yeah, you were a youth and it was a long time ago for you too. But, you know, I was involved in Scouts, as I've talked about in previous podcasts. I was involved in a few other youth organizations over the years. And as an adult, working with different ones, and my wife currently, we are part of a team that is working with and running Camp Wauwatosa Youth Camp in Effingham. Where we don't do the programming, we just maintain a camp that youth organizations can come and bring their youth to and do outdoor type programming and activities. And in looking at other things and in society and where things are today, and I'm gonna say two main things that have had an impact on it. One has been the advent of technology, simple technology. How am I recording this podcast and getting it to you? It's all done on my phone. Present time, it's all done on my phone. And I carry this phone with me everywhere. And guess what? So do the youth. They have their own phones. Every youth walks around with a cell phone that's worth $1,000. I can't imagine my parents ever letting me have anything like that I could lose. I mean, a car would be worth more than $1,000 and you can wreck it, but you can't lose it. But whether it's through obsessions with gaming or obsessions with social media, obsessions with goofy videos, which probably any and all of us out there can say, yep, I've gotten trapped into some of those things too. We've got kids growing up where that's not just their babysitter. In some cases, it's become their parent. You know, the parent, not per se the discipline aspect of parenting, but parents need to teach, learn, create opportunities for their kids. And I see that failing in a lot of ways, but I digress. Another part that has come into play on this has been from the time of the pandemic. A lot of youth organizations shut down. A lot suffered greatly, and the numbers have not come back. And so we have a generation growing up that's going to be hitting adulthood or has hit adulthood. And the skills and the things that are valuable that's talked about in this article just being lost. There's different TikTok videos that come through my Facebook feed. I don't have TikTok, but, you know, these little short video things. And yeah, one of them that I find humorous and I find sad and I find frustrating and I often feel anger with them is where there will be somebody with a microphone out in some crowded public area. Maybe it's Times Square. Maybe it is in Vegas. Maybe it's along a beach. Maybe it's on a college campus. And the guy just stops people at random and ask them questions. Now, I understand, you know, this person's creating a video with a particular theme, so they're going to weed out the people who can answer the questions. But the fact that in our society, there are college age men and women who don't have a clue about simple questions, and they get nervous with the question and they just volunteer how they don't know much, or I never paid attention in school. But if you don't know that there's 50 states If you don't know that you live in North America and border with Canada and Mexico, if you don't know when the founding of our country was, if you don't know these common questions, the answers to them, it's sad. It's really sad. And I think for those of us who have children that are still minors or grandchildren that are minors, maybe we need to pay attention to this list. And granted, this list was specifically written regarding, you know, what every man should know. But take from it what every child should know in order to be a strong, healthy adult. So let's get into the list. And of course, you know me, if you subscribe to me, I'm going to comment on this. So anyway, here's the little background that was in the post. What a Young Man Should Know, 1933, a checklist for becoming a proper man. This was published in March 1933. Did I say 93 earlier? Anyway, 1933 issue of Harper's Magazine. The writer is Robert Littell. Details ability, skills, and accomplishments and extracurricular proficiencies that every man should have if they are to become a self-sufficient and well-rounded human being, ready for life and eventually marriage and raising their own children. The learning starts from a very early age. Here is the short list. So, number one, he should know how to swim at least a mile, dive creditably, and not feel panicky underwater. He should be able also to revive those less skillful than himself by rolling them on a barrel and pumping their helpless arms. I find it interesting how the first item on this list is swimming. Swimming is a wonderful, wonderful, and important skill. My mom did not know how to swim. My dad did. Dad grew up here where we currently live, which is a quarter mile from the river. And he grew up fishing in the river because they didn't have a pond at that time. He grew up swimming in the river. He grew up trapping animals for their furs to sell during the Great Depression along the creeks and rivers. My mom grew up a few miles from here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 5 miles from here on the prairie. There wasn't a hill to be seen. There weren't any natural creeks in that part of the prairie because everything was flat. And early on, in the early days, it was just a marshy prairie. So all she had growing up was a drainage ditch. She never learned to swim. Her mother didn't know how to swim. And she basically said, if you never get in the water, you never have to worry about drowning. Well, I guess there's some wisdom in it, but I think there's another option. And so when I was a little kid, Mom signed me up for swimming lessons, and she signed herself up for swimming lessons and became a competent, you know, swimmer and confident in the water. She had one scary experience, and the person that was the teacher, you know, helped her out of that. But she still got in the water, and she wasn't afraid of the water anymore. Well, when I was in Scouts, and if you were in Scouts, Boy Scouts, you know that the one of the required merit badges is swimming. And typically, you get it your first summer going to summer camp. I didn't go to summer camp till I was an older scout. I just never went. I did a lot of camping, did a lot of outings, but, you know, swimming is an important skill. Whether it's just simply to open up a recreational avenue for you, or to know in case you're in a situation where you have to swim. Now here it says, he should know how to swim at least a mile. How many of you have ever swam a mile? I have. I did it in Scouts. I actually did it three different times. Each time I went to summer camp, it was on a Wednesday morning. You had to be at the pool real early, just, you know, after the sun came up. And the first time was actually in the larger lake at the summer camp. We had to do four laps around these floating milk jugs. The other times, it was always in the pool. And it was a lot of laps. I can't remember for sure. And the people who were counting your laps were not always accurate, making you swim more than a mile. But a mile swim takes a long time. And yes, you're tired. But are there situations where that would be an important skill? Yes. If you're in a situation where, you know, a boat goes down or you get accidentally thrown overboard and you have to tread water for an extended period of time, or you need to swim to shore, or you need to swim and negotiate a current in a river to get to safety, like let's say if you're canoeing or something, that's an important skill. You need to be able to dive credibly, you know, not falling in, but knowing the right way to dive and not being panicky in, under, or around water. Because what gets you killed in water? Panic. Panic gets you killed in a lot of situations. But panic in water can lead to tragedy. I guess that's why Grandma said, if you never go in water, you never have to worry about drowning. And then it says he should be able also to revive those less skillful than himself by rolling them on a barrel and pumping their helpless arms. Well, if you know a little bit of the history on like CPR has not been around for a long time. You know, if someone has a heart attack or if they drown, and the idea was that if you roll them on a barrel, that's a way of getting the water out of their lungs. And the thought was if you move their and rotate their arms, it's creating a motion in the trunk of the body that, you know, gets some air in. And we learned it wasn't very effective, but it was better than doing nothing. And then CPR came about and those skills. And so when you learn swimming, you should also learn that skill of CPR. Some people say kids shouldn't learn it. I say bull crap. I was 11 years old when I was first certified in CPR. And back then they also taught two-man CPR. And then that fell out of favor. And then it became favorable again. But, you know, everybody in my scout troop learned CPR as their first year of scouting. Why? Because bad things can happen. And having those skills are just vitally important. Vitally important for being a good adult, I guess would be the term. Let's look at number two. He should be able to drive an automobile well, and he should not be altogether helpless when a car breaks down. He must know how to change a tire and offer some sort of diagnosis when the engine sputters and dies. Well, a lot has happened with automobiles since 1933. My dad was born in 26. And so around 1940, my grandpa took my dad to Shelbyville to get his driver's license. And he didn't have to take a test. He didn't have to take the driving portion. The person at, I don't know if it was done by the Secretary of State, if they had those officers, or if it was the police. I don't know who did it back then in 1940. But they asked my grandpa, does he know how to drive? And grandpa said, yeah, he can drive real well. Okay, that's all dad had to do. to get his driver's license. Well, that isn't the way it is today. And so it's good that we have driver's ed. It's one of the important skills that they do teach at school. There's a lot of other important skills that they don't. And so we as parents, as grandparents, need to take the lead on those things. Not everything should be taught in school, but we as parents and grandparents need to take that responsibility. And maybe this other part really fits in. He should not be altogether helpless when a car breaks down. No, I mean, cars are a bit more complicated than they were in 1933. 1933, the engines were, it was basically like a large lawnmower engine. Yeah, it had more than one piston, but there wasn't all this other complicated crap that we have on the vehicles today. And so you could do major repairs and overhauls in your garage or underneath a shade tree at your house. You could do that back then. I remember my first car, which was a 65 Oldsmobile, Dynamic 88, and Dad overhauled the engine in our machine shed because there wasn't a whole lot to the car. You could easily do it. But there's some things that you need to know rather than just automatically going to some other place to get it done. You know, changing a tire. Sometimes AAA isn't there. Do your kids, do your grandkids, boys and girls, know how to change a tire? Do they know how to check the pressure of their tires? Do they know to make sure the spare tire has pressure in it? Do they know how to change oil? That's a skill that I would say 90% of the people in America don't know how to do. Why? Because we have oil change places in every town. And that's wonderful until you need to do it and you don't have those places available and you're kind of clueless. It's a skill that you need to know. What are other basic maintenance things that you should know or things that you can do in order to properly operate a car, a truck, some sort of a automotive vehicle? So we are about out of time, and I've only gone through two. And so next time we will continue, and I will do more because I won't have to do a whole lot of explaining. We'll just keep working our way through this series because I think it is important. So take notes, and we will catch you next time for another cup of coffee. I need to drink my tea. It's getting cold, and my dog needs to go out, I think. Okay, well, we'll talk to you next time. Take care. God bless.